Welcome to the Humans in AI podcast, powered by AI Frontier Network. I'm your host, Flor Laorga. Each episode, we dive into the human story shaping artificial intelligence through the journeys of entrepreneurs, builders, and leaders. We explore the insights, challenges, and visions for the future of AI and humanity. Let's uncover the human side of AI together. Okay. Great. Hi, Marco. Thank you very much to join this podcast, Humans in AI, hosted by AI Frontier Network, me, Flor. I appreciate a lot of you make time for this. So I'm very happy that you are here. And I hope that we have a good time and we can get to know you a bit better. Let's start from the beginning. I like to start from the beginning always, like a little bit of your background, your story. I know that you grew up in Italy. So basically you are Italian, I guess.
It's correct.
And then you studied in England, in London. That's where kind of as well I figure out. Yeah. So you studied software, right? Software.
Yeah.
So this I found it very interesting because you are doing something a bit different. No, you're doing go to market. I'm doing like sales, marketing, and all this stuff. So, what was the journey like? Yeah. How it happened? I would like to kind of understand that. It's very interesting.
Absolutely. And thank you. By the way, thank you for inviting me here. It's a real pleasure. So let me start, as you say, let me start from the beginning, because I do think I'm a believer that like a lot of our earlier experience shaped the adults that you become. And I do think in my case, for instance, like a lot of my early experience have shaped the decision I made and the person that I became. And I'll start maybe just telling you a little bit where I grew up, which is I grew up in a very suburb, small, little town in the south of Italy. My parents are post-war. My dad is born in the 1946. That's literally like the end of the Second World War. They experienced real, let's say, struggle, right? And it was a hard time for them. And so to the point where my dad, for instance, would not be able to go to school. He was taken out of school when he was like 12 years old. And he was not forced, but he was asked, right, by his dad to work to sustain the family. And so the reason why I'm telling you all of this, and you get to the classic like post-war stories, which is the sugar is locked in and you cannot eat sugar if not for your allotted quantity during the week and all the sort of things. And so the reason why I'm telling you all of that, it's because growing up, then one thing that was clear to my father and it was always installed into me was, hey, look, you have the privilege to study and you have the privilege to get to acquire knowledge. And that was something that since I was very young, it was one of the things that really shaped like the way that I think, because my dad would be like, I did not have the choice. Like I wanted to actually continue to study and I could not study. He didn't have a choice. And so growing up for me, this idea of, hey, knowledge is important. Knowledge gives you choice. If you have an education, you have more options in life, was one of the things that really shaped how I thought about life in general. And it's something that is still very dear to me. And so a lot of the choices that then I made in my life were due to this kind of like inner belief that more knowledge you have, more education you have, the better you're going to be at making decisions and interacting with people and opportunities and whatnot. And so then you really, after that, basically, like I consider myself as having stumbled upon a set of circumstances that then led me to where I am right now. Like where I started in the high school, I wasn't a particularly good student. I was a mediocre, I would say, student. But at some point, something clicks in your brain and ambition like kicks in. And I still remember a moment in high school where, you know, a colleague of mine, let's say a friend of mine told me like, hey, he was a bit bragging about like him being very good. And I remember saying, you're not that good. You're just studying a lot. I can be better than you, for instance. And that was the point where, you know, then started studying more and kind of became top student in the city. And then that gave me the opportunity to go to Milan, studying engineering. And then once you have proximity to people that somehow think and behave in a given way, then opportunities present themselves, right? It's very hard when you come from a background where you don't have like proximity to people that behave and think in a given way. But once I made it to Milan, I made it to Polytechnical, then it's easier, right? It's way easier to actually be working in proximity opportunity. So from there, like it was opportunity for me to learn English. I moved to Stockholm. From there, I was working on some stuff that were interest to a professor in Oxford. So I was called into Oxford, and that's when I went to UK. And then I stayed here ever since. So I took a little bit of a detour, but I hope that gives you a little bit of an idea of how kind of like I was shaped since a very early young age.
I love the story. I love stories. I think stories are so important and so... I think you really learn a lot from the stories of other people. So I really like when people share their story. Yeah, this was very interesting. So I've got a few insights from the story that you told me. Now talking a little bit more about what you're doing, basically you're from being an engineer, now you're, yes, doing everything more related with marketing. So in the professional field of talking about leadership, how do you think that influence in your leadership and strategy, an AI strategy, because that's where you work with AI?
Yeah, and just so you're asking how the stories have influenced my leadership style? That's the question. Look, it's, again, if you think of the evolution or the career progression of pretty much anybody that slowly makes it from, say, being a more technical profile towards owning more and more bigger teams, it's like you're owning more, you're getting basically more responsibilities and you're getting more, and basically the impact that you have is larger. And as a consequence of that, then it means you interact with, you need to manage and interact with more people, right? It's not that from a day to another, like you get to manage large teams. And the reason why I think it's interesting is because I always say to people, it's very easy to do well when you are in control of what, you know, the outcome of doing well actually means, right? So if I give you a task and the task is solely dependent on you, then you can work very hard. You can work extra time. You can really apply yourself. But then you know you're going to achieve what you want to achieve because it's really dependent on you. It becomes really much more difficult to achieve outcomes and have impact when actually that depends on other people. And I think leadership is really that, right? It's actually the ability, right, to influence in a sense and to understand what matters to other people. And really, it's not about yourself anymore, right? So basically the focus is shift from being about yourself to figuring out, right, what motivates people around you so that you can get the best of them, really. And I think that change, to some people, that change comes really natural. To some others, like, it doesn't, right? And to me, I'll be honest with you, it took a while because I was the type of person, given my background, given the technical background, that I tried myself. I want to solve everything by myself. But then you reach the point where you realize if you try to do it yourself, you're going to fail, right? These things are just too big, right? There's a reason why we need teams. There is a reason why we have organizations. And so you can't just look at yourself. And then it becomes a question, really, hey, what makes tick the people around yourself? And how do you get to the point where people really trust you? And so, you know, then, you know, becomes the questions of trust, right? How do you build trust in people? Because then, you know, people want to work with leaders and colleagues that they trust, that they see as authentic, that they see as compelling. And so it really shifts completely, right? Let's say the type of work that you do. And I love it doing it now. I think it's what is most fulfilling.
That's very interesting too. But so when you, it's very different to when you have to just lead yourself, but you're just the one who have to take, you just have to do your task because you know what is your task at, then you have to wait the other people do their task. And you are the responsible that those tasks are done because otherwise you are the leader there, right? I know what is that feeling as well. So it's very interesting. As your role in relational AI is where you're working as a global head of a GTM, right? A go-to-market. How do you balance your work between humans and AI?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great question, Rod. And I think it's one of those questions where, you know, innovation and human collaboration are strictly tied one to the other, right? And at the same time, I think we also are at a very kind of like important and inflection time in history, actually, when it comes to AI, which means the type of things that we get to explore and like work on today are the type of things that a few years ago would be really unimaginable. And so the let's say, the topic also of morality and ethics when it comes to AI becomes really central to everything, of everything that we do as technologists and everything that we do as a leader, right? And at least for me, that's like a really interesting topic that I spend actually a lot of time thinking about it, right? I feel like a lot of people don't want, potentially they don't even want to talk about it. I think it's one of the most important topics that we should be talking about it. And the way that in my head this, AI or ethics in AI and humans come together is, look, technology in general is not inherently good or bad. It's shades, right? For everything we work on as an organization at Relational AI, I like to think there are going to be things that are unambiguously good and it's easy, right? So if it's a thing that is unambiguously good, then, of course, we're happy to work on it. We want to do that type of work. There are things that are going to be kind of like neutral. And in that case, also, it's okay. We can work on these things. We know they're neutral. And then there are the gray areas, right? And by gray areas, things that maybe involve morally thorny or difficult decisions, right? Like an example could be like, hey, should we work on AI models that have something to do with health and insurance and potentially immigration, right? Like, or oil companies or military. And look, every technologist, has a choice here, right? Like, to either you say, I work exclusively on one or two, or you actually engage with the dialogue and the conversation. And my belief here is that I love to engage with the conversation and the dialogue, because I do think that disengaging from it, right, it's what I call virtual signaling, or simply pretending that these problems do not exist, it's actually an abdication of responsibilities, right? Like, it's like, I do think we have the responsibility to be mature enough to be able to talk about these topics so that then we can actually come to the best conclusions, right? Like, and the best outcomes for everybody involved. And so I don't think there is a clear answer then for the third bucket that I described to you, right? These kind of like gray areas, but it's a one ad hoc kind of case by case situations. And so I find myself encouraging this type of conversation. And this is where the human comes in the loop, right? Because you asked about the interaction between AI and human. It's like being able, right, like to use your own judgment and to debate together in order to decide what's better for the common goods, really.
So what challenges do you think the most common for your team, for example, to apply AI in what you guys do and all the sales and marketing things that you guys do and put the tech to the market? What is the main challenge that you notice more often?
We tend to apply nowadays AI really to pretty much everything that we do, okay? Rather than challenges, I would really consider those to be opportunities, right? Because nowadays, even things that in the past were really almost like impossible to tackle with AI or that will require very specific skills, nowadays actually really simple to do, to engage with AI. And when you look at our team, so I lead both, like I lead marketing, sales, delivery, and also partnerships, right? AI is pretty much at the center of everything we do and how we make decisions. It helps, for instance, us to score deals and understand, for instance, which deals are like hotter than others. It helps us to figuring out specific marketing campaigns. And so we try to have AI really at the center that we do. When I was talking about the different case and gray areas, it's more like the applications of specific technologies that we work on in customer context, right? And that's where I think it becomes like really interesting, the dialogue and the debate, where these things are not really black and white, right? And so, for instance, I give you a few examples, right? It's healthcare is one of those, right? Should you work on a healthcare company that does, for instance, that is developing specific medicines, right? And some people might be okay with that. Some people might not be okay with that, right? And how do you reach together a conclusion or an agreement? So these are the type of things that I think like nowadays are kind of like very common, the dialogues that are very common because AI is so embedded in everything that we pretty much do.
Yeah, so in your perspective, just talking you as a person, you can talk, I mean, you're a person, but I mean, as a professional or on a personal note, so that's what I meant. What do you think about the future of AI in the marketing, sales, the areas that you are working in, for example, from 5 years now? There's a lot of noise, right, that about AI will take your jobs, and then the first thing that nobody, you don't need marketing anymore because you, with AI, you can just create all campaigns or email marketing. You can even have an AI agent who sells for you. So why need, like, people? What is your perspective or point of view from all that noise and all the, these things.
Yeah, okay. You're touching on a topic to which I have potentially one of the most controversial view here. So maybe controversial views are good. I actually like controversial views, so I'll start by saying that. And I'm going to abstract a moment for what you just said and extrapolate to, like, hey, what's going to happen, as you said, if AI is able to do more and more, okay? And what's the implication for humans if AI suddenly is able to take on more and more? This is a personal view, of course, has nothing to do with relational AI. It's a personal, deeply personal view. And it's a view that, again, is shaped by my pursuit of knowledge, okay? And I truly, truly love the concept of evolution, right? And understanding as much as possible of what's out there. And it is clear to me, at least, that some of the limitations that we have as a human, whether it's like biological, whether it's like time, right? We have a limited amount of time to live on Earth. Actually limit the amount of knowledge that we can get about the universe. We all know, even traveling 100 light years, right? So traveling at speed of light for 100 years, it takes us to a tiny part of the universe. I find that deeply saddening, right? Not knowing that I will never be able to know, right, really what's out there, right? Beyond that, it's kind of saddening to me. And to me, the point of evolution is an interesting one, because if there is actually a way to evolve, in whatever ways that means, it could be hybrid, it could be just a different sentient being, right? Like it could be a purely AI species. But if that evolution takes us closer to understanding some of the meanings, maybe that we cannot grasp currently, then for me, you know, that's good evolution. And if you think like humans have been like really a tiny part of history, right? Like even if you consider like the history of Earth, right, we're here 1,500 years, 2,000 years, right? That's really nothing. We're a blip. We're a little blip. And so the question is, yeah, is that good or bad? It will depend, right? If it takes us closer to something that currently we cannot even understand, but it's closer to something which is meaningful, then it wouldn't be particularly bad, right? Like, yeah, to me, again, this is a personal view. So to me, that will actually be fulfilling. Understanding that we're getting closer to understand what's around us will be really fulfilling. Then to your question, yes, some jobs, I don't think jobs will go completely away in the next 10 years. Like still there will be new jobs. And you see this nowadays already, right? Like where you get people that needs to upskill themselves and become better at writing prompts and become better to interact with agents. Will that be always the case, right? Will we always be able to upskill? I don't know. If 50 years right from now, will we actually still be able to upskill, or will be becoming irrelevant? That's a question that I think nobody can actually answer, right? At least not nowadays, at least not at the pace of which innovation is currently happening. But for me, it's a question that doesn't make me look at the future sad. It actually makes me look at the future very happy, because I think it gets us closer to that kind of like understanding.
I love the question. It was like a very personal perspective, but I like it because it's different. I just said you said it's a very personal, and I think that's what you are here just to express your ideas, and I think you should be able to do it, right?
Yes.
So Now we are talking about investing in the future. Well, about the future. So I know that you are as well an investor, right? So you are focusing on tech companies that address social challenges. Sorry. Yes. Do you have any story that from a founder or a company that you wanted to, or you did actually invest because it really touched you?
Yeah, so touched me in different ways. So yes, maybe I can talk a little bit about one of the company that I'm an investor of, and it's probably the one that is most public, which is ByRotation. Again, you can probably go on my LinkedIn and you can see I'm an investor in ByRotation. ByRotation is just for the people who don't know, it's a peer-to-peer marketplace for fashion goods, for clothes. And so it's almost like your Airbnb or clothes, right? Like where you can just rent out clothes. And the idea there is you can, you know, get your Chanel bag for an important wedding at just a fraction of the cost. You rent it for 3 days, you go to your wedding, you return it. And look, when I invest personally, I never invest into ideas. I only invest in people. And I think that's probably, if you speak with people that do some of angel investing, they will tell you like they will probably give you a similar version of this story. And so for me, what I want to see when I speak to funders and early startup funders, I do only seed investments, is I want to see people that are obsessed, okay, obsessed with a specific problem or a specific challenge. And in the case of Bi-Rotation and the Shida, she was an absolute force of nature. She was the type of person that she would not sleep at night thinking she comes from. She has Indian origins. She was ex-investment banker. She went for a honeymoon in India. She discovered that basically our landfill from Western society ends up in India in the majority of cases. So you see these mountains, right? Mountains of unused clothes and clothing, pieces of clothing that is literally dumped there. And she's like, oh my God, this is so out of whack, right? This cannot be the case. It needs to change, right? It cannot be possible. We buy these things for 10 quid or like 20 quid and then we decide to throw the day after. And so she went on a real quest on nurturing this idea of, hey, we need to be better. And that fashion is one of the major contributions actually to climate change. And she was relentless, like building marketplaces, because she built a marketplace, right? It's one of the hardest things you can do, because until you reach critical mass and you have both supply and demand, it's basically, you never know if you make it until you reach that critical mass. And she was an absolute force of nature. And so seeing her and that obsession and meeting her and hearing her story, telling me about her honeymoon in this little city and in India and what she experienced and showing me the pictures and showing me like, look, this is the mountain, literally the mountain of clothing that we drop there every single month. They receive these sort of things like, massive amount of clothing, it's just dumped there and it's treated as a living dumping ground. And that was very inspiring. It really touched me. And it was the type of thing that I think, again, inspires her as well. And she's doing very well. And I have been probably her first investor in that. And now, again, they're doing very well.
That's great. That's actually, whoa. It's a bit of a story, actually, I have to say. I think there's a lot of things that we can change as well. Yeah. Now, I would like to go, we are kind of almost at the end of the interview, but I would like to come back to the beginning a little bit in the way of, through all your journey, which obviously it's been, I know that all this journey of being, like, first of all, you were in Italy, then you were in Europe, and then now in London, like, moving a lot, go through the challenges by yourself, like, you've learned a lot from that for sure, that's, as you said before, so... There was any time in any moment that you just wanted to quit and say, I'm not sure what I'm doing here. Like, what are you doing? So, like, how did you went through that? And how did you go through that to discover, like, what you could do or how could you just get out of it?
Yeah, that's such a great question, Flor. I really love that because, in a sense, I feel like every single step that I made me question, or at least adapting myself. I don't think I'm the type of person that is secure and, like, by default, really, really secure of himself. And, like, the moment, for instance, I moved from my small town to Milan to do engineering, I was like, but I'm from this small town, this high school, like, I'm not good enough to be studying in the best engineering school in Italy. And then you go there and you realize there are good people. People are not that good. Like, they're okay. You are fine. And you start saying, I'm not that bad. And then suddenly, it's like, okay, I want to learn English. And you move to Sweden. And then again, like, you're like, okay, now it's another step, right? Like, you're like, okay, now I need to interact and kind of be compared, not just to Italy, but to a lot of people that come from everywhere. And again, you're like, I'm not going to be that good. I'm probably not going to make it. And then you realize, actually, there are good people. And there are people are not that good. And then the things repeats, right? You go to Oxford, you're like, oh my God, Oxford is one of the best universities in the world. I'll never compare. These people are geniuses. And then you discover, even in Oxford, there are some dumb people. It's not the dumb proof. And then you keep, and so what I'm trying to say here is, like, in a lot of cases, a lot of the doubt come from, is really self-doubt. And it's really your self-doubting about yourself. And there was one thing that I watched really recently about, it was from Obama. It was actually on Instagram. And he said something that really resonated with me. It stuck really with me, which was like, hey, don't let anybody tell you that you don't belong in any room, not even yourself. And I think that's so true, right? Like, that's like such a powerful statement, right? We belong, you belong. Right? It's just that maybe you haven't been exposed. And when you think with that lenses, right, then you really realize, hey, actually, you know, adapt and doing hard things and getting outside of your comfort zone. It's just the process of growth. It's just what it takes to actually grow. And the more you do it, and actually the better you get at it. And although I have a lot of these moments, I think I would keep pushing myself to continue to find this moment, because I think that's when actually growth happens. And so I think I'll constantly adapt myself.
Are you still doing right now, like in this period of your life?
Oh, yeah, all the time. Look, when I got on this role, this global role at Relational AI to lead like everything non-product, you know how many people have way more experience than I have, right? So who am I to be this place and not the other 300 people that could be better than me? But if I think this way, like, I'll never actually be able to make a decision. I'm here because people have trusted me and because I've shown myself. And yes, there are going to be cases where I'm going to doubt myself. There are going to be cases where things are going to be difficult. There are going to be cases where I probably wouldn't know what to do and I need to figure it out. And it's okay. Again, it's just part of the journey, right? And it's constant and it will happen all the time. And I actually nourish it. I'll tell you there was another sentence, actually. There was something that a good mentor of mine once told me, which is, how did he frame it? Like, he said that the moment of maximum learning is often at the place of significant pain. And I think it's so true. And so I try to get myself in places of pain as much as I can.
Yeah, sometimes that I also feel a bit like that. Like, it's just sort of like, why I like so much challenges? It's like, why I don't make my life easier? But I think as humans, we need challenge. Like, otherwise, it would be boring. We'll be like, what are we doing? Like, most of the people, sometimes people, when they don't know what to do, and they're just kind of, okay, I don't have any challenge, they get in depression. So I guess it's better challenge, right? And just get through it.
Right. 100%. I really think you need that for growth. And then, like, you realize, like, actually, it's the more you put yourself into uncomfortable position, and the more that becomes normal. And so the more growth becomes normal. And then you reach the point where you really seek, as you were saying, like, you seek the uncomfortable moments, because on the back of your head, you're like, those are the moments where, you know, I'm going to grow. Those are the moments where I'm gonna reach things that I didn't think I could reach.
Yeah, it's very sweet, actually, answer, I would say. I always say interesting, I'm going to change the world now. I think this is a bit more personal question, but what would you say to this kid, which is you, but you're not a kid, when you, let's say, like, when you were doing software engineering and these kind of things, what would you say? Like, now with the knowledge and the person that you are today, with the role that you have today, with all the challenges, lessons learned already, like, what would you say to that kid or teenage, let's say, or yeah, I say kid, but it's not a kid, but yeah, you understand me.
yeah. Look, I will tell, there are going to be some hard moments in front of you, and there are going to be some moments that it's going to be really tough, and yet you'll come out of it and look back and never think that those moments, you never take away those moments. And again, cherish and those moments and make them part of your journey and make them part of who you are, because actually that's probably the most beautiful thing of the whole journey. And so if I would look at myself back when I was a little kid back in this small town in the south of Italy, I would say, like, just enjoy the tough moments, because they're going to make then who you are later on. And I love that. That's what I try to
remember. Thank you. Nice. Thank you for sharing that. It's very beautiful. So I've got a last question for you. And it's more this kind of open questions that I always do at the end of in every interview. It's more about, it's a question and answer for you, like, you make to yourself. Like, it's an open question or open that you can just share advice or share something that we haven't. We talked at different points in the interview and different things, but maybe there's something that you would love to share extra. So feel free to do it. It's your moment.
Yeah, let me think about it. So you're thinking of something just that we didn't talk, maybe that could be relevant. Is that what you think?
Yeah, or like, you would like just to share or emphasize something else or remark something that we already talked. Like, it doesn't have to be something that we didn't talk at all. Like, for sure, it's more of, it's a free question for yourself, like open question.
Yeah. Look, I'll say, maybe we can conclude with this maybe thought, which links to to what we were talking before about doubts and self-doubt, which is, in a lot of ways and in many cases, right, like, the difference between making it or failing it is just a person who believes in you and who tells you, hey, you know what, Flor? I think you can do it. And if we can all be those person for people around us, I think we'll be in a much, much better space. And so if I think to kind of like myself, either in the future or you know, in 1 year, 2 years time, I would love to see myself as being that person to people that are dear to me, that person that tells them, hey, you know what? You got it. You can do it.
Yeah, I think that having a positive environment around you that encourages you is a big thing. It's the key of every success. I think like sometimes we don't see it. Like when we see someone on TV or on the news, or, oh, this person succeed, but it's always a team. It's someone behind, maybe someone. This is always about, you never can do, you cannot do like everything by yourself and succeed. It's like impossible. It's always, there's something behind that. Yeah, 100%. So Marco, thank you very much for the interview. I have an amazing time with you. I've learned a lot as well. Yeah, I hope that you enjoy it too. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Flor. Thank you very much. I really enjoyed it. And thank you for inviting me here. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Humans in AI podcast. We are here to spotlight the people making AI more human, one story at a time. See you in the next episode.